I'm Dr. Casey Mixon, Assistant Professor at Valdosta State University's Psychology, Counseling, and Family Therapy Department and Project Director for the Military Families Learning Network Family Development Team. Along with Barry Sobelson, Licensed Family Therapist and MFLN Family Development Programming Coordinator, we invite you to join us for our anchored podcast conversations. We started this podcast in hopes to support and inspire those connected to military families. Each episode focuses on real-life struggles and practical solutions to lessen the harmful ripple effects. We invite you to sit back, relax, and get anchored with us. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us today. Today's episode will focus on the transition process from military life into the civilian world through retirement. We feel that it's important to acknowledge that retirement from the military is a very different process than retirement from the civilian world. It is our hope that we can shed some light on those differences and offer some insight into the process from a family development perspective. To assist me today in presenting this topic is Mr. Alex Maynor. A native of Jacksonville, Florida, Alex is a United States Air Force veteran with over 20 years of service. He has over 15 years experience in community service, providing homeless management information services. His background in data management systems, program development, and nonprofit sustainability extends over 2 decades. And when he is not working to improve the ways of the world and being a superhero, Alex enjoys his grandchildren, his niece, and playing golf. Alex, thank you so much for being here today. I feel like this conversation is so important to those service members and their families who've experienced retirement or who are even considering retirement from the military. As I said previously, there are some fundamental differences in retirement from the military and retirement from the civilian world. So we're going to get started, if that's okay.
That's great, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Okay, so the first question I have for you is a pretty basic question, but I want to know a little bit about your background and what your decision, what made you decide to join the military?
My decision to join the military, it came about as a result of basically economics. Mm-hmm. My family couldn't afford to pay for my college education. So after applying to a few universities and actually seeing what the costs were, I decided I did not want to stay home and work at part-time jobs. So the best vessel for me to get my education was through the military. So that's what I decided to, that's when I decided.
Okay.
And it was funny because during that time, when you take the test for the military, you took it in high school. You have a choice. It was one day they tell you that the people are coming in for you to do the ASVAB. And at that time, I had no particular interest in going to the military. So I basically took the test. I did half of the test, closed the book, and put my head on this and went to sleep. But after I decided to join the military, it was just fortunate enough that I had completed enough of the tests and I scored high enough to still be able to enter the military.
Nice.
Even though I didn't complete only half of the test. So
that's impressive then. That means you had a pretty high score.
Pretty
for
good
that.
Score, yeah. And I was able to go into the Air Force, so that was pretty impressive. So,
yeah.
But that's what happened. I joined right after high school. As a matter of fact, my parents had to sign because I was 17 years old.
Okay.
So they had to approve me joining.
Mm-hmm.
And I graduated in June, and by August the 31st, I was leaving.
Wow. Did you have any friends or neighborhood or family members or anybody like that who also decided to do the same thing, or was that just something you did on your own?
It was interesting because the day that I left, one of my childhood friends, a young man that I had been knowing since middle school, we all went in on the same day. And there were 3 of us that were actually in high school together, 4 of us actually, that actually entered the military on the same day. 3 of us were going into the Air Force and 1 into the Navy. So it made that day a little easier because I had 3-4 people there that I was accustomed to, had been hanging out with, were friends of mine.
Yeah. Wow, that's really neat. Very interesting. And I would be willing to bet that your experience is shared with other people in that, you know, they couldn't afford a college education, mm-hmm. or they couldn't figure out financial means to support their education and decided to go through through the military and use that as a route. Mm-hmm. Did you know, did you find that, that to be true when you joined the military, that there were other people who were there for the same reason?
Exactly. There were a lot of people there for different reasons. Most were to take advantage of the educational opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay. So as we all know, the military culture is one of its very own, right? It has its own distinct culture that kind of stands out from other types of culture. So I'm curious, did you experience when you entered the military? I know you just said a few minutes ago that it was nice for you to have four people that were kind of in the same boat as you. So I'm assuming that you were implying that the experience was a little bit different for you when you joined.
The experience was different. However, one of the guys that I went in, we did go in on a buddy plan. I forgot to mention that earlier.
Oh, okay,
so we went
okay.
in on a buddy plan, which meant that we would stay together up until our first assignment. But as far as the culture of the military, it wasn't that much of a transition. I have been involved with sports since the age of 7.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of came up in a team environment. I knew what it was to be a part of a team
mm-hmm.
and everybody contributing to meet the ultimate goal. So the initial shock, of course, yes, you know, having someone yelling at you and intimidating you to the point where you just don't know what to do, that was a culture shock. But the team aspect of it, being a part of a team, it wasn't a hard transition for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, having a friend there, not somebody that I knew, but this was actually a friend of mine,
right.
Having them there made it a lot easier also.
Absolutely, yeah. Did you notice that there were any people, though, that did not transition well?
There were quite a few.
Yeah.
There were quite a few that did not transition very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people this story all the time. My good friend that I mentioned, he was having problems adapting also because in that environment, what they're teaching you to do is become a team.
Mm-hmm.
And if one person is a weak link.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, they assess you to see how you come together to support that. So my good friend, his method of getting people to act right, he was kind of violent, he was aggressive. So he would pretty much get the, if you don't do it right, we're going to have to fight.
So if somebody wasn't pulling their weight.
Exactly. So that got him in trouble a couple of times. So we'd have to pull him to the side and say, you know, you can't beat up everybody. You got to find a way. We got to find what works.
Right.
And ultimately, you found out that if a person couldn't march, that, you know, they weren't a good marcher, then that day we were getting tested on marching, you find something for them to do inside.
Ah.
And a person like me, I was good with ironing clothes. And shiny shoes because I came up, my father had a barbershop, so I was always around people on shiny shoes.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't have to worry about the menial details like kitchen duty and cleaning up the bathroom because I was shiny shoes. So you learn to adapt and get around the deficiencies to meet the ultimate goal. So that wasn't that bad for me. I was kind of used to that.
Yeah.
Like you say, I've been playing sports since I was 7 years old.
Yeah.
So you always knew if you had a player that was a weak player, you would find a way to mask him, not expose this person.
Right, right.
So that wasn't hard for me. Easy part.
That's good, yeah.
It was, the hardest part was the diversity in the people. Of course, I grew up in an African-American community.
Mm-hmm.
And we were not actually exposed to other cultures to sixth grade.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, we were segregated to sixth grade.
Okay.
And then when I left sixth grade, I went to an all-black high school, junior high school.
Mm-hmm.
And my high school was not segregated, but the population was mostly African American.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't exposed to Hispanics or Asians or. So that was. The other cultures was a little bit of a transition for
me. Uh-huh.
But it was fun because you would learn
yeah.
things and you would see things and why do you do that? And they would explain it to you and
yeah.
they would ask you, why do you do that?
I was going to ask, yeah, was it reciprocated? Yeah, were they curious about your culture
and,
too?
That was the interesting part and that was fun. That made it fun.
Yeah.
So
and exciting to learn about new people.
Exactly. And when you weren't being intimidated and terrorized, you know, when you had the ability to just sit back and relax whenever that was, you would also just learn to learn the people that are around you.
Mm-hmm. That's really neat. Wow. Interesting. Okay. Can you talk to us a little bit about your experience of, so your experience of kind of finding a balance between your military duties mm-hmm. and your life, or did they blend together? I know oftentimes when we've talked to folks in the mm-hmm. past, they've said they kind of all meld into one. It's not
And it's interesting you say that, because there's a piece before that, though.
Okay, sure.
And when you first come out of your technical training academy or school, what they call it, I'm not sure what they call it now, you get your first assignment. Mm-hmm. So I'm from Florida. I grew up sand and beaches. But my very first assignment was Rapid City, South Dakota.
And for folks that don't know about Rapid City, South Dakota, what would you like to say, Alex?
Well, of course, you know, that's where Mount Rushmore is.
Right.
The Black Hills.
Right.
I arrived there 4 days before Christmas. I was 18 years old. All my life, all I knew was sun and beaches. I think there was 3 feet of snow on the ground. And like I said, I got there 4 days before Christmas. So everybody knows around Christmas time, everything kind of shut down.
Sure.
You know, everybody's gone.
Right.
So there's nobody really to... your sponsor really just kind of said, hey, you okay? All right, I'm going to leave. I'll see you in about 10 days, you know?
Yeah, glad you're okay.
Yeah, glad you're okay. So my first 4 days, I kind of spent just sitting in Billiton, which is the hotel on base, and just kind of looking out the window, watching the snow, and soaking it all in.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I got to my duty station, and... everything's different. The radio is different. The songs they play on the radio is different. Mm-hmm. The stuff that comes on television is different. And it was so funny because after my first 6 months or close to 8 months, I tell this story a lot too. My supervisor sent me to the hospital. And I'm thinking, you know, at that time you got all kind of appointments. When you first come into the military, you have all these appointments. And when I went to the appointment, it was with the psychiatrist. And I thought that was routine. You know, I'm thinking it's just, okay, this is just, because you go through so many things and they tell you, you got to do this, you got. So when I got there and, you know, I was talking to him and said, well, we understand you have an adjustment problems. And I said, no, I'm adjusting fine. And they were like, well, your supervisor said you don't talk to anybody. And I said, well, that's because I don't hunt. I don't fish.
You don't listen to country music.
I don't listen to country music. I don't ski. 6 months ago, I was in the beach with shorts and flip-flops, and I was in Florida. So I don't talk because I don't have anything to contribute to the conversations that are going on around me.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the psychiatrist said, get out of here. There's nothing wrong with you. And they sent me out. And that was interesting. That was funny. That's something that stays with me forever. That was the first culture shock that I got. I wasn't even aware that I was having a culture shock until that moment.
Right, right.
Because I was just, you know, I mean, even when you get off from work, I was go to the gym and I would play basketball mm-hmm. and these things and, you know, just work out. And I never really even thought about a culture shock other than seeing, whoa, there's a jackalope. you know, and seeing stuff like that, you know, mm-hmm. like, okay, and the little prairie dogs, you know, right. just, wow, prairie
dogs. And the white stuff you're walking on is
right,
snow
right.
and not sand. Yeah.
And having to tie yourself together to walk to work.
Oh.
Those type things. So those, yes, were culture shocks, but it never really got to me. It never occurred to me that I was like experiencing anything that mm-hmm. other people noticed.
Mm-hmm.
So after that episode, I kind of like, I guess they, of course, you know, they contact the supervisor and they tell him, this is not on him. It's for you guys to reach out to him. I don't know if that was their first experience with the African-American young man. Could have been. We never had that conversation, but.
Oh. So the supervisor never even brought that to your attention. They just told you to go straight to the psychiatrist?
Yes. Okay. He never came to me and said, you're not talking. Why are you don't talk to
uh-huh,
us?
Uh-huh.
I would have told him right then, I don't talk because I'm listening to the radio and I don't identify with any of this music and you guys are talking about hunting and fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing about it, I wasn't the only African-American male in that particular office. There was another guy, but he was from, and I'm not picking on the South or anything, but he was from a place called Op, Alabama.
Okay.
I don't know where that is. Never heard of it. But
apparently, you knew it was down South.
Wherever it was, it was not any type of metropolitan area stuff going on, because he was right. He could relate to everything. That's all he did.
Mm-hmm.
That was right down his alley. Mm-hmm. And I found out he had requested to come to an area like that. So that's what he wanted to be. So although we both, African-American young men,
mm-hmm.
we didn't talk to each other.
Because
mm-hmm. he didn't play basketball.
Right.
He didn't engage in any kind of sport activity. So he wasn't engaged in things that I was aware of and things that I was used to.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't talk.
Yeah.
So I guess that's why they kind of said, well, what's wrong with him? You know, he's not talking. So.
Yeah. That's so interesting to me, though, that they didn't ask you about it, and instead they just went straight to the psychiatrist.
I guess because he was there, and there's nothing wrong with him, so it's must be something wrong with him.
Uh-huh. So how was that handled after that, though? Like, did they reach out to you or attempt to kind of join with you?
We started having more conversations, and I think because of that, you know, I'm 18 years old. I haven't been exposed to much of anything.
Right.
So I started just instigating conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Because of part of my personality, I wasn't doing it then, but then I started, if I hear something on the radio, I would just, what is that song about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would just say things to engage them. And I think that's how we kind of became a little unit of 8 or 9 of us that were happy sitting in there, and they didn't think that something was wrong. I was an alien from outer space or something. So, yeah, that's how we did that. I started, and they started engaging me a little bit more and asked me if I wanted to go with them to the woods in the hills.
And did you?
I went one time.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it was 2 times.
Well, and if you only went twice.
That's because they didn't tell me when they picked me up. They said we were going in the woods. Now, remember where I come from.
Right, yes.
I'm not equipped. So I had on sneakers and some jeans, and we go up into Black Hills. And you know, once you get to a certain place, I don't care if it was 75 degrees when you left, and you get up in the hills, it is now 15 degrees. So when we got there and got out of the car after 20 minutes, I couldn't feel my toes anymore. I'm like, okay, no, this is not working. I got to go back to the car. I'll just sit here with the car running in the heat, and you go do what you got to do. So it was one of those type experiences. But
I'm sure it was fun.
It was funny. We laughed about it.
It was fun for them to see you.
There was no animosity. We didn't get mad. I didn't get mad. It was funny to me. I was like, hey.
And they were amused.
Oh, yeah. They talked about it. And I was like, well, when we left the base, y'all saw, basically, you should have said, you need to go change.
It's not appropriate.
Yeah, that's not appropriate, you know. But
well, you live and you learn, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad that you, when I asked you about kind of the work-life balance, I'm glad that you added that next step into it before I just jumped all the way over to the whole work-life balance, because that's important what you've said, because we have to paint a picture and we have to have a context for everything. So so I'm sure a lot of what you learned through the military is just about other cultures, and not just the military culture, but other people's life experiences. I'm sure that opened your eyes to a lot of things.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
And being in that particular region, you got to see the Indian culture and interact with them often.
Mm-hmm.
So it opened your eyes to a whole different experience.
Sure. Yeah. And I know a lot of people experience that in the military. I mean, I've heard that story, not your story, but similar stories so many times, where people grow up in kind of a, you know, either a big city and go to a small town, or they grow up in a very small town and go to a very big place, and they're overwhelmed by that. And then the military culture in addition to that, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, where am I? Who am I? So that's my next question. So talk to me a little bit about, so when we talk about retirement, from kind of a family development standpoint, psychological standpoint, however you want to phrase it. Mm-hmm. We have heard people often say that, you know, their identity kind of shifts. Mm-hmm. So obviously you were talking kind of about that, about how you had a little bit of an identity shift, right? So you had to kind of, yeah. Move a little bit towards them, and they had to move a little bit towards you. So
yeah, you have to move left or right or center.
Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. But the good thing that, and the fortunate thing for me was, regardless of where I was, I always found a way to interact with the community. Mm-hmm. But because from my very first assignment in Rapid City, South Dakota, through sports, I was able to mingle with the surrounding community. So it wasn't just about, because a lot of people, all they knew, and a lot of people in my observation, they would stay within the gates of the base.
Right.
A lot of people didn't move outside of that. I was always fortunate enough to be able to do that. My first assignment in Rapid City, South Dakota, through sports, I was able to co-mingle with the community.
Mm-hmm. So with civilians and with the
civilian life. Strictly mm-hmm. civilians, because mm-hmm. you got to understand, there weren't that many of us mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. in the first place.
Right.
So through sports I got introduced to a lot of people. Then it was South Dakota University. I don't think it was South Dakota State. Mm-hmm. So you got to experience, you got to hang out with them. And plus, on top of that, I don't know how this happened, but there was shortly, I had only been there less than a year, or close to a year, and they offered me the opportunity to move off base. Hmm. So that was, I'm like, okay. I moved off base, and here I am. I wasn't even 20 years old. Mm-hmm. My first time living on my own in South Dakota. So I didn't have a choice but to mingle, learn the people in my apartment complex, making friends, because everybody in my apartment complex wasn't in the military. There were only a handful, maybe four or five. Mm-hmm. So in the apartment complex that I lived in, I got to make friends with a lot of people who were non-military people. Mm-hmm. So learning, engaging them, hanging out with them, I learned a lot. So I was always able to do that. No matter what assignment I was on or where I was currently located, I always felt it was relieving for me to, I work with people 8 hours a day. I don't want to still socialize with the same people.
Sure, yeah.
So it was always important for me to make friends wherever I was mm-hmm. and be engaged with the community. Mm-hmm. And that was through sports. But as I moved on, started getting involved with things like Meals on Wheels, mm-hmm. Special Olympics, mm-hmm. always in finding some other activities outside of the military mm-hmm. to participate in. And at that time, they weren't really encouraging it. It was always encouraged, but not like I think it is now. Mm-hmm. They pretty much put more emphasis on it now. Mm-hmm. But during those times, it was there for you to do, but nobody really had to emphasize it for me. I was always involved.
Right. Do you think it would have been different had your first assignment not been in such a foreign place to you? Or, I mean, do you think that helped you, or do you think it would have been the same because that's kind of your personality? I'm just curious.
I think it probably would have been the same, but I think it was the progression was a lot faster mm-hmm. because of the situation.
Right, yeah.
I think if I had been at a larger institution, a larger base mm-hmm. where they had the opportunities to do more things, for instance, say, if I was at a place like an Eglin Air Force Base uh-huh. in Florida, one of the larger bases somewhere right. where you have a lot more activities and a lot more going on, it probably would have been different.
Right.
It probably would have been a little different, because I noticed there was one place where I was stationed where that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. and I was in, and it's a larger base, Barksdale.
Mm-hmm.
When I was stationed at Barksdale, my interaction with the outside community was limited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if it had not been for my church that I was attending, that was my only real outside activity.
Mm-hmm.
The only people that I really socialized with were the people that I met in church.
Mm-hmm.
That I happened to meet through a girlfriend. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, so it was weird because now that you mention it, I think back on it and I was at a larger base
mm-hmm.
and I had been in for a little while. So my interaction with the local community was not the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's so interesting. You're like enlightening me left and right here.
Good.
So, okay. Let's talk a little bit about, so you've talked about the kind of your ability to balance between
mm-hmm.
civilian and military, but I want to talk about camaraderie. So this is something that we hear a lot
mm-hmm.
from military service members where they talk about the camaraderie that is established. And I think that you're probably very familiar with that anyway through teams.
Right.
Through all of the sporting events that you, you know, playing sports since seven, you know about that camaraderie.
Mm-hmm.
But did you establish that, or, I mean, did that come naturally for you? Was that something, obviously it wasn't new to you because of the sporting stuff, but was it different in the military?
It wasn't new to me, but it was different because even in the military and all of the team building exercises they give you and they instill in you, you're built that way. After so long, it's about the team. It's not about you.
Mm-hmm.
there's still a point where, and I don't know if this is just my personality, but I was still a little standoffish.
Mm-hmm.
I could work with people all day, 8 hours a day, 12 hours a day, 14 hours a day, 3 days, you know, 72 hours nonstop. But at the end of that day, when I left to go home, I really didn't want to hang out and see the people that I worked with.
Mm-hmm.
But I still met friends. I still had friends.
Mm-hmm.
And we built friendships and camaraderie there. And they're friends that I still have today.
Mm-hmm.
Because at some point, and there's still some of those bonds and relationships that you build, that they're only things that you go through with them.
Right, exactly.
So we have conversations today and we still talk about the things that only we talk about, nobody else knows, and we'll probably carry some of this stuff to our grave. I hope they carry it to their grave.
If you're listening, we hope you're carrying
okay.
it to your grave.
but that's the camaraderie that lingers with you. You never forget that. And even some of the guys who you work with from that 9 to 5 of those 8 of those 12, 14 hours, there are still some pieces of that even though we don't talk today, when we see each other, and I have ran into a few of them,
mm-hmm.
we have this understanding and
yeah.
we embrace and we know that, okay, you remember when we were in this trench together
mm-hmm.
and you remember when we were in this together, even though we don't talk about it. We look, when I see you, I automatically know and go back to that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and there's that connection there.
And there's that connection.
Do you feel like your relationships with your fellow service members, that camaraderie that you established with them, do you feel like there's something different about that? I mean, I know you said, like, you know, you can look at each other and just kind of
mm-hmm.
know.
It is different.
It is different.
It
okay.
is different, unlike some of my childhood friends that I've known since second grade,
mm-hmm.
and we're still friends today.
Mm-hmm.
Although we have our things that we went through, the bond that I share with some of my military comrades is totally different. Because with them, oftentimes, it was life or death.
Yeah.
So that bond is totally different than a friend that I've been knowing since second grade.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Went to school together. We're friends. Our parents
right.
knew each other.
Sure.
It's different.
Yeah.
It's totally different because I've never had to put my life on the line for them, and they never had to do that for me.
Mm-hmm.
So
hmm.
it's totally different.
Yeah, I could see why, for sure. So I'm assuming, were you deployed
Several times.
Okay. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, we can talk about that. There are several different types of deployments, though. I mean, you have assignments
mm-hmm.
that feel like deployments, and then you have actual deployment.
Right.
Where you go, for me, I was in Kuwait.
Mm-hmm.
My Kuwait experience is totally different from going to Osan, Korea.
Sure.
Although, there were times at Osan, Korea when you felt like your life was on the line.
Mm-hmm.
In Kuwait, you always felt like your life was on the line.
Right.
So, but there are different types of deployments, and you take away from those different things.
Yeah.
And the experience and the culture of the place that you're currently deployed to impacts a lot of what you do and what you feel.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a lot of people know, and I don't know, the guys that left, that came behind us, you know, being in Kuwait with the big water bladders, I don't even know if they still use those now, but there were some days you might be in the shower all lathered up and you lose water. What are you going to do now? You know?
Yeah.
So that's when you have to bust open the big water container and just pour it over your head to get the soap off you and you go to work.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so the area that, or the region where you deploy to impacts, or the impact that it has on your deployment is, it creates the environment for what you experience.
Sure.
There's a difference from Korea to Honduras to the desert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And all of those impact you in some way or influence you in some way.
And the people that you're with.
Uh-huh.
So there are people who experience those things with you, and there's subsections of your overall military experience, because you're going to run into people that you only experience that with. So
mm-hmm.
there's a subset.
Mm-hmm.
So you have your military family, and then there's subsets of that military family.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So I have this feeling that South Dakota is really a blessing in disguise for you in a lot of ways, because it kind of set you up to be a little bit more open to different environments, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like so it was such a stark contrast from Jacksonville, Florida to South Dakota. And you talked a lot about that and how you were kind of reserved and quiet, and people were wondering if something was wrong with you and what was going on. And you then realized, oh, well, it's because I'm so different than them, but you embraced it. I mean, you've talked for, 30 minutes about how nicely you've embraced that and you were able to move forward. So it sounds to me like these deployments, I mean, it seems to me like if you had gone from Jacksonville straight to a deployment to Kuwait, you might not have been quite as prepared for Kuwait had you not
right.
gone to South Dakota and learned kind of.
And there were the in-betweens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was kind of alluding to.
Right.
The subsets.
Right.
Every experience prepares you for the next experience.
Yep.
Because when I left South Dakota, I went to Korea.
Mm-hmm.
So I just went from the Midwest. So now I'm in an Asian, I'm drop dead in the middle of this Asian culture.
Mm-hmm.
So there, you don't get the opportunity. And this was, and I'm aging myself now, but I don't know how it is now. But during those times, you didn't get the opportunity to pretty much be standoffish.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because there was almost an initiation thing during the time when I came into the Pacific, PACAP, they used to call it. The day you got there, there was initiation. It was almost like a fraternity type thing.
Mm-hmm.
You got there and it was like, okay, then we're gonna initiate you. So it was no questions asked. I don't care who you were. Everybody that came through the door got this.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't get the opportunity to pretty much like, nah, I'm not going to do
this. I'm good, right.
No, that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, oh, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
The day you got there. So from that day on, you started, it was almost like people kind of just peel your head open and just pour stuff down in it.
Yeah.
And it was like that for the first 2 or 3 months. And then after that, you could pretty much say, well, okay, wait a minute. Now this is where I'm going to go left or center or right or
mm-hmm.
center from here.
Mm-hmm.
But the first couple of months, you pretty much was just taking it all in.
Yeah.
Every time somebody said, come on, try this, let's go eat this, mm-hmm. taste that, mm-hmm. wear this. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. You kind of fell into that mode.
Yeah. That's so interesting.
So that experience kind of opened you up for the next experience.
Yep. Isn't that the beauty of the military? How nice.
That's the beauty of the military.
It is. That's yeah. And that's something that is just so very unique about the military, is that there is that constant just change and shifting mm-hmm. and moving and adjusting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that I've noticed as a civilian, been a civilian all my life, that I admire and notice so clearly about people who have been in the military, and their family members too. I mean, we can't forget about them. Mm-hmm. You know, they're oftentimes they go on these assignments. They may not go to the deployments, obviously, right. But they go on these assignments too, and they're thrown right into the middle of it as well. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a very, very important feature of the military, I would say.
I was fortunate that I never had to move my family. I've always taken small, what they call 1 year assignments, 18 month assignments. I was fortunate enough. So my family always kind of stayed grounded, which kind of kept me grounded, because when I came home, it was that little pillar of stability was there. Mm-hmm. So I was fortunate enough to be one of those.
How was it for them though?
Considering that they had all of their support around them, mm-hmm. it was okay. Of course, I wasn't there, but yeah. everybody else was.
Good.
Family, mm-hmm. friends, everybody else was still there. So it's like the only person that was missing a beat was me. Mm-hmm. I was the one that had to come back and get retrained on what to do and when to do it and mm-hmm. other than that. So everybody else was okay. I was the one that...
And that reintegration process is a whole different topic. Oh, that's yeah. a whole another can of worms, right?
Can of worms.
Yes. Yeah,
so we didn't have a reintegration. Okay, that word. We didn't have that when we were coming. Uh-huh. You could, and I remember distinctly being in South America mm-hmm. on Friday. And Friday at 8 o'clock that evening, I'm in Jacksonville, Florida. And I've been in Honduras or South America, Belize, Tegucigalpa. I've been there for the last 90 days in the jungle. And I mean, let me tell you about this one experience. And that was so funny. I never will forget it. We were having a joint exercise and it was in South America. And you never unpack, because you're basically living in the jungle. So we have these hooches, but they're in the middle of the jungle. So you never really unpack. So after my 90-day stint, I was working with the Army. And my Sergeant Major came in. I worked at night. I worked from like 3 to 11, which was the best time because it's absolutely miserable in the daytime. Mm-hmm. I'd rather be at work at night. And I never forget that night when I came in, my Sergeant Major said, "You go home in the morning." Okay. So when I got off from work, you go unpack, you just grab your bags.
No need to pack, yeah.
And go to the departure point. And I mean, we are in full military gear, face painted, everything. And I mean, that's the way we were. And we got on our flight and we left. And we got to Savannah, Georgia. I forget the name of the little, it's not even a really base, it's the place where all of the, I think the Rangers deploy out of, I forget the name of it, but it's like an airfield. Mm-hmm. They dropped us off there about 4:45 Friday. And when I say dropped us off, that's what they did. Air Force people know what I'm talking about. When you're deployed with other branches of the service, when you deploy with the Air Force, it's fine. Mm-hmm. But when you deploy with the Marines and the Army, mm-hmm. all of the Army people stayed on the truck and they rode off somewhere. They just threw our bags off. There was a sign in the middle of the thing that said holding or whatever it was. Uh-huh. And we it's like 4 or 5 or 6. We're just standing there like, what now? You know, we just stand in the middle like, okay, what happens here? And just so happened, a guy came by and he's like, "Oh, well, y'all need to go to the terminal." So here we run to this terminal and I mean, we have everything with
you
us.
You still have your
we
face
got
painted?
Everything. We got, I mean, we have everything with us. Mm-hmm. Only thing we didn't have was weapons. Mm-hmm. Bayonets, you name it. So we go in there, and the lady's like, oh, y'all barely made it. Because, you know, they're civilians there. They were like, okay, we can't go home at 5 o'clock.
Right.
So she finally get us on these flights, and we get to the terminal just in time. Our flight is leaving in like 15 minutes. We're trying to go through security. The thing kept going off and buzzing. And finally, the guy just said, look, y'all need to go and take off everything. I don't care what it is. Put everything you got on in the bag. Because we just kept setting the thing off. We're trying to go through there with bayonets. And I was like, no.
Oh, geez.
So finally, we delayed the flight. They delayed the flight for us, which was good.
Yes, that is good.
Because we're trying to fly into Jacksonville.
Right.
And we got to Jacksonville about 6:30. 7 o'clock that evening, 7:30. And, I mean, we just walking through the airport like we just left the jungle. We had just, and my mom, I remember my mom picked me up from the airport. And she just looked at me and go,
And I was like, I wish you could see his face that he's making right now.
I was like, well, if yesterday I was in the jungle, okay, and it rained and it was mud. And I'm like, okay. So, but anyway, that's, they didn't have a reintegration program.
Mm-hmm. That or process. They
It didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
One day you could be in the desert.
Mm-hmm.
And the next or the day after you would be home.
Mm-hmm. And that's just, that was, again, that's all part of that culture that you experienced.
Mm-hmm.
That only those folks who were there with you
understand.
Right? So you can tell me the story all day long, and I think, oh my gosh, that must have been so hard. But I wasn't there, and mm-hmm. I don't know what that must have really felt like, you know. Wow. Well, okay. So now that we have talked about all of the good stuff about your time in the military, not all of it, because obviously you have lots of other stories, but I want to shift to the retirement process. So I want you to talk about the decision. How you made that decision, what the process was like for you.
The decision was kind of simple. I had my time. I couldn't go any further.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew I would have to retire. And I knew that 12 months in advance.
Okay.
So I had a whole year to really process.
Okay.
And prepare for it. Okay. So during that 12 months, you start to prepare. You start to downsize, move things. Because I was, at that time, I was stationed in Warner Robins, Georgia, and I was going back to Florida, Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
So you start to prepare, get your mindset, which for me, it wasn't that difficult because, like I said, I never really was so devoid of what was going on in Jacksonville. I knew where I was going. I knew what I was going to do. So. Well, I didn't know what I was going to do because I didn't have employment. But at that time, part of my planning preparation was not to do anything. I said I was going to take 12 months away from everything, let my hair grow, let my beard grow, and just become a beach bum for 12 months. That's what I said I was going to do. I don't say nobody bother me about working or doing bathing or doing anything. I'm just going to, for 12 months, I'm just going to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
That was my plan. So, during the 12-month process, you start to downsize. You don't want to start buying. You don't buy furniture. You don't. You know, I wasn't doing stuff like that. Anything I would have to move. What I had was it. And so that process, it wasn't a bad experience, but it is. The closer you get, it becomes emotional.
Yeah.
Because you know that okay, I'm never going to do this again. I'm never going to put this uniform again. On again, I'm going to see some of these people, and the biggest part of it was, although I have a small core of friends that I still remain friends with, the interaction with a large group of people was no longer going to be there, and that was the part that was kind of like, okay. I'm used to dealing with or engaging 25, 30, 40 people a day,
mm-hmm.
maybe more, and I'm not going to be doing that anymore. So that was the part that I was kind of like, okay, let's see. I don't know how that's going to feel.
Mm-hmm. How did you kind of work towards that or through that? Or did you just have to, did you just tell yourself, I guess I'll just find out when I'm out?
Yeah, that was basically it. I was saying I would have to find out when I'm out. I didn't, there wasn't a plan. There was no video you could watch.
Right.
Although they do have the briefings that you have to go to, they didn't really address that.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about the different services that might be available and things of that nature. No one said that, okay, we're going to give you some isolation training.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to sit you in a room by yourself for like 4 or 5 hours and see how you do it. No, there wasn't anything like that. So it was pretty much, I just have to see how it works. But I was looking kind of forward to it. I was looking forward to see how it was going to work out,
mm-hmm.
being a civilian. Because again, like I told you, I was already immersed in that. I was doing Meals and Wheels.
Right. Yeah. You were still keeping your connections.
I kept
to
my
the
connections
civilian
always,
world.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
So I knew what was out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the thing was, the hardest part for me was knowing that I would never have the military part again. The civilian part wasn't that complicated.
Mm-hmm.
It was the military part that I would never be a part of again. Well, you're never not a part of it, but just on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
That was the part that was kind of sitting there going, okay, that's the unknown.
Right.
The civilian part I could handle. That was easy. I was used to handling them, the time changes and the way you talk and the way you say things and acronyms and things of that nature. And that was the one thing that I had to learn to stop doing, was the acronyms, because in the military we have acronyms for everything.
Right. Yes.
When I brought that into the civilian world, they would look at me like, what?
English, you know, please.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So that was one of the things that I had to learn to stop doing, was the acronyms.
Right.
And that was about the hardest part, was the acronyms.
That's funny.
To stop
really
using
funny.
The acronyms.
Yeah.
The military time wasn't a problem.
Right.
I could drop that easy, because I had to, when I spoke with people that wasn't in the military,
yeah,
I didn't use it. So
mm-hmm.
I kind of knew how to turn it on and off.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't a hard part. But the acronyms was the hardest
mm-hmm.
thing. And then the other part that made it a little difficult was the fact that, coming from a structured environment, I was not prepared for how unstructured the civilian world was.
So you didn't realize growing up how unstructured your life was.
Exactly.
Until you entered
the
military.
And I was like, okay.
So that's interesting to me that you didn't mention anything to me about that when I asked you about the culture shock piece,
mm-hmm.
that you didn't say, I went from this very unstructured environment to very structured, but that you did notice going from being very structured to back to being unstructured.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting
and
to me that you didn't notice it.
I think that was all right, because I'm kind of a structured person anyway.
Yeah,
some people
right.
say I'm OCD.
Yeah.
Because they think now that I've been retired since 99, I still fold my clothes the same way I did when I was in the military. So they all say, but I've always been, before going into the military, I was still, even though a teenager, I still like things to be a certain way.
Hence you being good at the ironing. Like
exactly.
you mentioned that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't a problem. But it was a problem after I had did it for 20 years. And when I came out of it, to start being around people that weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of, even today, I tell my friends and even my son, I won't go to his house because his lifestyle, I can't sit in there because it's like so unorganized. And I told him I started breaking out of hives. I got to leave or something. You know, I can't sit in here with you that long. Now, he's going to pick the grandkids up and leave. I can only do like 45 minutes in their house,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it was real funny and interesting
mm-hmm.
that coming out and noticing how, wow, and it became to the point where I was like, how do y'all function?
Right. Unstructured.
Unstructured like this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So have you been able to maintain like the same sort, and I know you personally, so I know the answer to this question, but I want you to share with other people who might be kind of going through the process or considering retirement, or who have just, it has just come to fruition and they're kind of experiencing that. Have you been able to kind of find that balance in the civilian world where we are not quite as structured here as military world, but have you been able to find that balance where you can survive without breaking out into hives every day when you see how?
Oh yes.
Okay.
Oh yes.
So talk a little bit about that.
And I do it a lot.
Yes.
Because I'm still involved. I'm involved with a lot of different projects. And like you say, you and I know each other personally, and we work together. And we know that I've had to have a blind eye to some things and some people because they are not structured.
Mm-hmm.
So what you learn to do is work around those people and let them fit
mm-hmm.
in their unstructured characteristics, and you fit them into the overall big picture. It comes back to the team building part.
Yep.
So, yes, I do it quite often. I have a fundraiser that I'm a big part of, and they'll tell me, "Oh, you OCD." No, it's just about a presentation. You know, we're very visible, and the big picture is what motivates and drives me. So that's what allows me to take the unstructured folks and incorporate them into what we're doing. So yeah, I do it on a daily basis almost.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's almost a daily thing, even at work.
And you don't have to carry Benadryl around.
No Benadryl.
So
no.
That's good.
No. Only time is Benadryl is mostly with the family. Now that's where it really, with the family is where it really becomes an issue.
Right.
Work and the other activities that I'm involved with outside of work and in my personal life, they're okay. They don't really
mm-hmm.
don't make me itch that bad. It's mm-hmm. just the family members are the ones that really get you.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm. That's funny. So I want to go back just a little bit. You were talking about how the military really prepared you for kind of the whole process, like services mm-hmm. that were available to you and things like that, but that they didn't kind of focus on like maybe the emotional aspect.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you were saying acronyms was the hardest and then the structure piece, obviously, but do you feel like it would have been beneficial? Well, I have two questions. The first one is, would it have been beneficial for you to have had somebody to kind of address those things and say, hey, this may come up. We've talked to people who've retired, and from an emotional standpoint, this has been very hard for them.
Mm-hmm.
Would that have been helpful? And my second question is, was there anybody on the other side for you who had experienced retirement that you were able to kind of look to for advice or for, you know, kind of an idea of what you were about to experience?
The answer to the first question, yes, it would have been very beneficial if I had somebody or if there was a program available to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, no, there wasn't anybody, because the thing is, if you retire in a place, and I'm going to use Robins Air Force Base or Moody Air Force Base, if you retire in a place like that and you stay there,
mm-hmm.
then yes. You have all kind of support, because the same people still come to the NCO clubs, the retiree guys, they still go to the gym,
right.
and they still do these things. But if you leave, for those people who leave those places and go to a place, for instance, Jacksonville, Florida,
mm-hmm.
and you know, yes, Jacksonville NAS is there, but Jacksonville is so big, you don't know where everybody's hanging out. Unless you go on base and go to the NCO club and stuff like that, which for me wasn't feasible because I didn't want to drive 45 minutes.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
So I didn't have that. I didn't have the support people, because when I left, I went back to family friends, high school friends, and everybody else. So no one could relate to anything that I was going through
mm-hmm.
because I kind of detached myself from that military environment. Unlike if I had stayed in Valdosta
mm-hmm.
or stayed in Warner Robins,
right.
I would have still been in the same circle. I'd have been going to the gym.
Right.
I'd have been going to the NCL club. So there would have been people there that I could say, hey, why am I feeling this way?
Mm-hmm.
Or
mm-hmm.
what did you do?
Mm-hmm.
So no, I had nobody to actually reach out to. And the other thing about it, all of my really close friends were still in the military.
Mm-hmm.
So none of the ones that had retired, I was in communication with. Everybody that I was in communication with was still enlisted.
So you got to be their person.
Yeah, I got to be their person. They called me after they finally got to where they were about to retire. So mm-hmm. it was nobody in my immediate circle that was there.
Yeah.
You know, you have supervisors and superintendents and officers in charge, but I didn't really communicate with them like that. They mm-hmm. were not in my immediate circle.
So did you grow your hair out and your beard out and play on the beach and become a beach bum for a year, like you said you wanted to?
No. No, I did not.
How did I know you were going to say no?
I did not. That was my plan, but I happened to, I came home, like I said, I left May, and I went back to Jacksonville, and I was there for about 3 weeks, and my childhood friend, my son's godfather, had just opened a business.
Mm-hmm.
He was into imported wines, cigars, and coffees and teas. And he had about 3 or 4 business partners, and all of them had full-time jobs. So they were a startup, and we were sitting around talking one day, and they had nobody to install their computer system. Nobody to install their QuickBooks, nobody to do these kind of things. And they were like, they were basically doing it. It was a hard copy world. They were doing it on paper.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I was saying, do you realize that that's not going to work? You know, you need to start creating a data system for this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, when you want to do it?
Mm-hmm.
So from there, I became the person who basically was the manager of the business, which in turn was translated into co-ownership. So I didn't get that luxury. I immediately went into the wine and cigar business, which didn't allow me to grow my hair out, because a part of that was marketing,
right,
and going out getting new business, and I couldn't do that.
With big hair.
With big hair and a beard. I could have, but appearance is everything. You know, we would talk in the military, you got to have the creases and,
mm-hmm.
and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're out talking to, which at that time was Smith, Klein, and Beecham and Edward Jones,
mm-hmm.
you have to look presentable.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if you're out trying to sell wine and cigars and imported coffees and teas, you might want to be a little neat.
Yeah.
You know,
Yep. I gotcha.
So, no, I never got that luxury to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a month and I was into that throne.
But do you think that was probably good for you, though?
That was great for me.
Yeah, good.
That was excellent for me because I started to see the civilian side of it, the mm-hmm. civilian side of business and how mm-hmm. it works and how it operates and learning the ins and outs. So I was ready at that point. You know, you have the transition classes where they teach you how to do your resumes
mm-hmm.
and this stuff, but they don't teach you the networking skills. They talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They talk about it. There's a brief section there. They talk about it, but the actual learning how to network, how to interact with people
mm-hmm.
on the other side.
Right.
I couldn't use terms that
right.
I used in the military, so I had to know other terms. And plus, I was learning a brand new business.
Right, right.
I was learning, you know, we drank wine, but mm-hmm. nobody taught me wine and cigars. I didn't know that there was a science behind cigars.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm learning this, and I'm talking to people, different cultures.
Yep. And you can all give that to South Dakota.
Yes. I can all give it to South Dakota because I, at that point, you know, it was funny because at 10 o'clock in the morning when I'm getting ready to open up the shop, you have vendors there that's waiting to drink wine and smoke cigars. And I'm going, who drinks wine and smokes cigars at 10 o'clock in the morning? I don't. But that was the business I'm in. I'm
that's
in that
right.
culture now.
That's
so
right.
now
and
I got
to learn that culture. And
you mm-hmm. have to adapt to it. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay. Can I go get an egg sandwich first?
Because that's the kind of thing I do at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, can I get a biscuit first before I start? I got this new wine I want you to try.
Yeah.
You know, but that was their culture. So
yeah.
Learning to adapt to that,
mm-hmm.
It was really easy for
mm-hmm.
me because I had all that experience from going
Absolutely.
From one culture to another.
Right.
You know, it helps out.
Right.
Because the days when we were in where were we? Okay. I was just thinking about when we were in France, but I can't remember where we were in France.
Oh, that's okay.
Marseille.
Okay.
We were in Marseille, France. And you know, you, I can't speak for a lot of guys' experience, but we had times where we were just out on the economy. Mm-hmm. And here we are, four guys riding down the highway in Marseille, France. And we, you know, you have to learn and adapt.
Yeah.
So it was the same thing. Mm-hmm. Just learning to adapt. Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you did that very successfully, so that's good.
It was not bad. It wasn't hard for me. I didn't go through one of those experiences that mm-hmm. I just didn't know what to do. And mm-hmm. I think your personality has a lot to do with that also.
Yeah.
But the key for me, I think, and I advise everybody, although you're in the military, stay connected to what's going on outside of the game. Mm-hmm. Because that helps a lot. It will really help a lot.
I think that's a really good piece of advice. Mm-hmm. And it sounds to me like that's what kept you from getting down and out or being confused about what to do in that transitional stage. Mm-hmm. But I think that you did say some very important things, and obviously, you know, switching with the acronyms, that was kind of hard. And then it sounds to me like there was maybe some emotional stuff that you weren't quite prepared for too. But it sounds to me like you were able to keep your identity throughout the entire, it may have shifted a little mm-hmm. bit, but you were able to keep your identity without feeling this horrible loss. Mm-hmm. Because you kept one foot in the civilian world still, or maybe a toe. Maybe a toe, not a full foot.
It was a foot. It was a foot. Okay. Sometimes a whole leg.
Okay. In South Dakota, it was a whole leg. But maybe when you were, okay.
Even when I first got to Valdosta, it was almost at sometimes half of your whole body because my wife had just graduated college, and being that she was a member of a sorority, mm-hmm. in her quest to find a job, she attached herself to her sorority sisters at Valdosta State University. Mm-hmm. So every day I came home from work, there were Sarahs, 5, 6, 7, 8, or 9 of them in my house. So even after she went home for a stint, but I think there was an illness in her family, and she went back home for a couple of months at a time, that didn't stop them from, I had pretty much became their husband too. So even though she was gone, I still had 5 and 6 sorority sisters. So they always kept me involved in what was going on. Mm-hmm. Then it was out of state college. Mm-hmm. They always kept me involved in what was going on. So I was spending a lot of time at Valdosta State involved in activities.
Right.
And so I started building friends, and a lot of people were like, we thought you went to Valdosta State College. You were here so much, and I had this whole family that was outside of the military.
Right.
So that's why I say it was like half a body. It was more than mm-hmm. a leg at certain points. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of interaction mm-hmm. and doing things there, being a part of the different organizations who worked in the community was a big help. And I don't know if they still have organizations like that. At the time I was there, we had things like what was called the Black History Organization. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they still do stuff like that. But I was the co-chair. So we did a lot of functions mm-hmm. that included the community. Mm-hmm. Half of the people that sat on the board came from the community. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of interaction with the community as far as my experience went. Because I was involved with so many different things that branched out into the community. So it was quite natural for me.
Yeah, and that's really good. And that's mm-hmm. I'm sure that will be inspiring to other people. And I'm glad that people can hear this and kind of take pointers from that. But for those folks who weren't able to keep a half a body or a toe or a leg in the civilian world, what would you offer to them? Because I have a feeling that some of those folks that you, some of your comrades, probably weren't quite as social as you were or as able to kind of have both the military and mm-hmm. civilian world balance. What would you, if they came to you and they said, listen, I'm kind of at a loss here. What do I do?
I would recommend looking at what you're currently doing. You might think that even though I'm not interacting with the community, in a way you are. If you are attending church, if you have children that are in school, if you have organizations, Masonic organizations, most of those are available wherever you are. Mm-hmm. So I would say tap into those. And I think a lot of people do that. If you have children, that's the number one key, is that through the school, I can tap into the community and then just keep it progressing from there. Mm-hmm. So if you have that one little resource that you can tap into, go ahead and tap into it. And then let that progress, let it be a natural progression. So if it starts out with daycare, and if it's something you're interested in, find your interests. Where are you? Mm-hmm. Where are your interests? Mm-hmm. What do you like to do?
Well, and I think my guess is that some people come out of the military, and it's not just my guess. I know that I've heard this before. Some people come out of the military, and you were very fortunate that you didn't experience this, but some people come out and go, I don't really know what I like to do, you know? I mean, I've been in the military for so long, I don't know what I like, and I don't know, you know, what to do, or, you know, but I think it's a great piece of advice to just think about it.
And
try new things, right?
Try new things. And not only that, I mean, it can be a gym affiliation, because you could come out of the military or you could retire, and we're used to having the gym right there accessible to us. But if you go back to a place where the gym might be across town, if you still like going to the gym, then let that be your vessel. Mm-hmm. They have all kind of activities that are going on at different gyms. You just have to kind of read the board and see what's going on, and let it be a natural progression.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I cannot thank you enough for joining me today to talk about this process, and I've learned so much about you that I had no idea. we have, but we didn't talk in such depth about it, but I so appreciate you doing this for us, and I appreciate all of the listeners for joining in on this conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. If you'd like to hear more episodes from Anchor, check out the links provided on our website or our episode Learn event. Just enter MFLN Anchored Podcast in your search engine to get you there. We offer continuing education credits for this programming. Information about that can be found on our website, or you can just email our team, MFLNFamilyDevelopment@gmail.com. We hope you will join us next time.